Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, and right now I want to tell you America is under attack. America is under attack. There's an organized, orchestrated effort to destroy the industrial base of our nation. There's an organized, orchestrated attack to raise the cost of electricity here in America, to force you out of your cars, to destroy the industrial base of this nation. And, of course, it all centers around something called climatism. Well, this evening is Steve Gorham, and Steve has written a fascinating book by that title, Climatism. Steve, thanks very much for being with us tonight.
Good evening, Dr. Stan. My pleasure.
I'm going to let you sort of pick up the story and tell us about your book, how you got interested in this subject, why we should be concerned about Al Gore and the information he's putting out. So many people actually believe in global warming. They're concerned about the impact as far as the polar bears are concerned, or concerned about the rising sea levels, concerned about the change in the weather and the droughts and the problems we're going to have and the famine we're going to have because of global warming, and really, of course, how we are on the edge of an abyss. If we don't go ahead and correct this problem, we're going to destroy the Earth. So you pick up the story.
Well, you touch on a lot of subjects, but I think we can summarize them all. I've named it climatism. And climatism is the belief that man-made greenhouse gases are destroying Earth's climate. And it's become more than a science argument. It's become a belief system and a political movement for global economic revolution. And in many ways, it is aimed at the United States. Part of the drive behind climatism is to suppress energy usage and consumption. And we are the largest, by virtue of our economy and our prosperity, the largest user of energy in the world. And so it's a delusion. I say that the world is in the grip of a madness. We currently have 192 of the 193 heads of state of the world that are enacting policies to try and stop the Earth from warming up. And so if you define madness as being out of touch with reality, that is the case. Global warming is due to natural cycles of the Earth, not man-made greenhouse gas emissions. And so these policies that are going into effect around the world are going to be completely fruitless.
Well, am I to assume then that you don't believe in green power? Go right ahead. I'm being facetious. Go ahead. Please don't take me seriously. Go ahead.
I think there are many good reasons to protect the environment and to reduce pollution, but we need to understand what are real pollutants. And certainly there are pollutants we put in our water and pollutants we put in our air that we need to reduce and try and control over time, and we've done a good job in that in the United States, and most of the developing countries are doing a good job. The problem is, though, that carbon dioxide is now called a pollutant, and that's really a bizarre situation, actually.
Okay, carbon dioxide is a miracle gas. It makes your flowers grow, it makes trees grow, and they actually, without carbon dioxide, why, the whole structure of life on this earth would end.
Absolutely right. A woman in Australia named Joanne Nova, very smart lady, puts it, I like her example. She says, for your listeners, when they sit down to dinner, they should look at the table and realize that everything on their dinner table, except the water and the salt, depends on carbon dioxide and wouldn't be there. The bread, the meat, the cheese, the salad, everything is based on carbon dioxide.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment.
Yeah.
Well, Steve, you go right ahead with the story.
So It's just an amazing and astonishing situation to me that the world can be in this sort of a position. And I think people often ask me how we got to this position, and the real story is that the world jumped to a conclusion about the year 1992. In 1988, James Hansen, a scientist at NASA, went before the Senate at the behest of Al Gore, and he stated that he was 99% sure that the globe was warming up and it was due to man-made greenhouse gas emissions. The United Nations, who wanted to be a global environmental leader, formed a group called the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change in 1989, and they came to an immediate conclusion that mankind was causing global warming. And then in 1992, at the Earth Summit down in Rio de Janeiro, 38 nations, including the United States, signed the Framework Convention on Climate Change, a treaty that committed those nations to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. And since 1992, the nations of the world have been arguing how much to reduce emissions and not what's causing the Earth to warm up. But science over the last 18 years has shown us that it's natural cycles of the Earth and that carbon dioxide plays a very minor role.
I thought one of the points of your book was really so very interesting, and that was the fact that the increase in CO2, and there has been an increase in CO2, but very little of it has actually come from man's activity. So much of it has come because of the ocean. And, of course, that, I think, was one of the greatest revelations to me. And the other thing, of course, is that CO2 is absorbed by the Earth, certainly by growing things. But the ocean acts as a great sink, and most of the CO2 is in the ocean. And when the ocean heats up, then the CO2 comes out and rises, and it's not the CO2 causing the increase in temperature, it's the increase in temperature causing the rise in CO2. And Al Gore just forgets to tell us that.
That's correct. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change has made many assumptions, and they say that carbon dioxide will stay in the atmosphere for hundreds of years, even though many studies, 20 or 30 studies, prior to the IPCC changing history to some extent, pointed that the lifetime of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere was short. It was 5 to 10 years, roughly. So we have a lot of assumptions by the IPCC.
Hold that thought. Hold that, Steve. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess, is Steve Gorham. His book is Climatism. It's the story of the fraudulent effort to convince us that global warming is a reality. Yes, the Earth is getting warmer, but it's not getting very much warmer, certainly maybe 7/10 of a degree centigrade over 100, 150 years, something like that. And certainly the level of CO2 has increased. But it's when you stop and think about how much CO2. Well, Steve, how much CO2 is there in the atmosphere? Is this a major gas in the atmosphere?
Well, it's very small. There are we're at about 385 parts per million in the atmosphere, and to for people to get a grip on that, that means about 4 molecules in every 10,000 of the gas in the atmosphere is carbon dioxide. And the amount of the increase in the last 80 years has only been one of those 4 molecules. So carbon dioxide is a trace gas. And when a mother holds her newborn baby, she breathes onto the baby a concentration that's 100 times what's in the atmosphere, and the baby breathes it right back. And carbon dioxide is naturally created in our body by processes to use sugars. And then on the other hand, the way our world is beautifully created, plants use carbon dioxide in the opposite effect, where we breathe in oxygen and produce carbon dioxide. Plants take in carbon dioxide and produce oxygen. But the interesting imbalance is that there's about 500 times as much oxygen in the atmosphere as carbon dioxide. So it's a very small part of the overall climate.
I agree with you. Well, basically, why don't you just go ahead with all the arguments that we have there? How about the snows of Kilimanjaro melting? How about those poor polar bears who are drowning up there because, of course, there are no ice flows for them anymore?
Well, I go through in the book 8 beliefs of climatism, and one of the fundamental beliefs is that the world and the climate of the world was unchanging prior to the Industrial Revolution and mankind's emission of greenhouse gases, which is really nonsense. We've had many periods of warming and cooling. There's a period called the Medieval Warm Period, for which there are several hundred peer-reviewed studies. That was from about 950 until 1350, when the Vikings settled southwest Greenland. There are now graves in southwest Greenland at Falsey, which is one of the colonies, that are under permafrost. They were buried when it was warm, and now they're frosted over. And then I'm getting to the answer of your question about the polar bears and others here. It's taking a little time, but we went through a period called the Little Ice Age from about 1300 to 1850. And the Thames River near London would freeze solid. They used to hold a frost fair every year, and they'd have horses and wagons and huts right out on the river. This is captured in paintings. So we've been warming up since that little ice age in the 1600s. And it is true that some glaciers have been receding because overall the planet has been warming. But we've been warming since 1600, long before there were any significant emissions of carbon dioxide. And yet the climatists take every weather event, every ice melting event, and say, well, this must be due to carbon dioxide, when it's clear if you look at history that we've gone through many cycles that have been similar to the recent warming.
Yes, I thought it was very interesting that they make a great to-do about in 2007, I think it was, that the Arctic ice cap was receding. But they didn't mention that the Antarctic ice cap was actually extending.
Yes, we had two events in 2007. We reached a 30-year low in Arctic ice, and many scientists announced that it was going to be gone by 2012 or in the next 20 years or whatever. But the same year, we had a 30-year maximum in Antarctic ice, and that was not reported by the press, where the Arctic ice was trumpeted. Most recently, just about a month ago, from that 2007 low, we're now up to, in April, we were up to a 10-year high for ice in the Arctic. Ice comes and goes in the Arctic. I have a picture in the book of 1959. The United States nuclear submarine Skate surfaced at the North Pole in March. March is the time when the ice is always thickest. And if you look at the picture, it's a U.S. Navy photograph. There's no ice to be seen in the picture. The ice was at a low point in 1959. So it comes and goes periodically.
And, of course, this year, why, of course, it's really been come back with a vengeance. We talked to one of our friends over in Great Britain, and he actually has a jet, and he was telling how he'd flown his jet out over Greenland from London and how far south of Greenland the ice was extending this year.
Yes, there were some very cold winters. There was a picture taken by a satellite January 10th that showed the entire British Isles covered with snow, blanketed at once. It's completely white, and that's a fairly rare occurrence.
But now, why did they put the polar bears on the endangered species list if there's no danger to them?
It's all computer model projections. The polar bears is an especially interesting story. If any of your listeners watched the Olympics, there was about a four-minute commercial run by the World Wildlife Fund, I believe, that talked about how the polar bears were disappearing, et cetera, et cetera. But when you look at the real facts, in 1960, we had an estimated 10,000 polar bears in Canada. And in 2008, we had an estimated 23,000. So they'd almost increased by 2.5 times. If you talk to the Inuit people who live up there, they will say that this is the year of the most bear. and that there are so many of them that they become pests. It's all computer model projections. There's actually a scientist in Australia named Bob Carter, and when he makes presentations, he says, "I don't believe we have polar bears anymore," because he talks about the warmings we've had every 1,500 years for the last tens of thousands of years, and those periods were warmer than today. So, according to Bob, all those polar bears should have died off during those warm periods, but they're still here.
Well, he's saying that with tongue-in-cheek, I assume.
Yes.
Okay, fine. Well, of course, you point out the scientific studies. Of course, so many of the scientists really do not believe that man's activity has had any influence on global warming. Now, you make the point, global warming is a reality, but we're not talking about, what, less than a degree centigrade, maybe 1.3 degrees Fahrenheit, over, is it, what, 1850?
Well, you raise a very good point, and I don't believe most listeners realize that all this, I call it nonsense, is about 1 degree. We've had 1.3 degrees Fahrenheit rise since the Civil War in global temperatures, which is very small. I'm calling from Chicago tonight, and we vary between about -5 and 95 degrees Fahrenheit every year. So we have a 100-degree swing over a year. And if I was in the spot 15,000 years ago, geologists say that there was 5,000 feet of ice in this area. So while the IPCC of the United Nations tells us that this 1 degree rise is unprecedented and must be caused by man-made carbon dioxide, obviously 1 degree rise is not unprecedented in the cycles of the Earth.
And I really, of course, one of the interesting things in your book is the analysis of the ice cores, that they actually have ice cores going back, you know, tens of thousands of years, and that they can actually point out, and we're talking, of course, they're actually able to drill these ice cores down a couple of miles there in Antarctica and track the what happened in the weather there over a period of tens or hundreds of thousands of years. Would you like to tell us about that?
Yeah, it is very interesting. They drill down and they remove these ice cores and they try and find a place where the ice hasn't shifted much. And then the ice reflects what happens every year with snow that's deposited. Every year it snows and you go through a summer and a winter. And if they look at the oxygen that's in the ice, part of the water molecule, they can look at the structure of the oxygen atoms. They're either a typical oxygen atoms, which is oxygen with a atomic weight of 16, or they can look at oxygen that has an atomic weight of 18 based on the neutrons that are in the nucleus, but which is basically heavy oxygen. But those are proxies for temperature. So the warmer it is, the more, the higher the ratio of oxygen 18 to 16 that you have in the ice. So they can track summers and winters, and they can look and see what temperature variations were there. Really an interesting thing is Al Gore and James Hansen seized on early results from these Vostok ice cores in Antarctica, and they also look at carbon dioxide trapped in the ice. And Al Gore does his presentation and points out how when temperature rises, he's got this graph, carbon dioxide rises too, and he points that out as evidence that carbon dioxide is highly correlated and leads the audience to believe that carbon dioxide is the cause of the temperature change. But scientists over the last few years have zeroed in, and they found that the rise in carbon dioxide lags the change in temperature by an average of 600 years.
In other words, basically the temperature goes up and then the carbon dioxide goes up. It's not the other way around.
Yeah, that's right.
So the carbon dioxide rise is not causing the temperature rise, but is a result of the temperature rise.
And that's often not mentioned by the people that show that graph.
And what about the hockey stick graph? I mean, that is the greatest fraud I've ever seen.
Yeah, we'll have to discuss that.
All right, we'll be back here in just a moment with James Gorman, if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question, Steve. Steve is certainly one of the best informed people we know on this subject. So if you want to give us a call, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, Steve, go right ahead with your hockey stick. It's basic.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that'll protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Berkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Berkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
No, I just actually kind of wanted to make a little bit of a comment. I agree with what you guys are saying completely. But I had heard a couple months back that NASA had kind of proved that, you know, global warming is kind of a myth right now. You know, I mean, they said we were in like a cool spell and that kind of the world just kind of runs in cycles, you know.
Well, that's exactly right. Now, I thought NASA would put out some pretty faulty information, didn't they, Steve?
And NASA still holds the view of the IPCC. As a matter of fact, just about all the major scientific organizations of the world do, which continues to astonish me. It is true that the globe has been cooling for about the last eight or ten years, and it's not really statistically significant, but on the other hand, there is no warming that the IPCC has predicted. And as a matter of fact, the more than 20 supercomputer models that the IPCC uses, none of those models predicted the recent halt in warming, because they all were saying it was driven by carbon dioxide emissions. But NASA is spouting the politically correct view about global warming.
And if you work for government, you better say the right thing, Chris, or you'll be in real trouble. Anything else you want to say?
Well, I was just going to also kind of put this out there. You know, back in the 70s and, the early Industrial Revolution, when we were all of our factories were putting out all kinds of pollutants into the air. And then just over, the past even 20 years, they've lowered all this pollutants that these factories put out. And, obviously a lot of the factories are even closing down. Knock on wood. But I was just going to say, there's a lot, and even like vehicles are putting out a lot less pollutants today than they were, 30 years ago. So, Just the simple fact of that, it seems like that would dramatically lower the cause of, global warming in all entirety.
But, really. Chris, you're looking at things logically, and the tragedy is these people aren't looking at things logically. They have an agenda, at least many of them do, and that agenda is the destruction of the industrial base of our country. Hey, thanks so much for calling, and let's go to Joe, who's calling from New Jersey. Hi, Joe, how are you doing?
Okay, it's me again. I gotta just have this little input that's very interesting to me. I hope you find it the same. It's a little gist of a quote from a book as well as a poem right after this quote. And in this book, the gist of this quote from this paragraph, Krakatoa put some, I think it was in 18 some odd years ago, 1800 year, the date, 1800 some odd years, it put out so much ash and pollutant that if you were to take all the garbage produced by the humans of the world for 3 years and ground it up and spew it out into the atmosphere, it wouldn't come anywhere near what Krakatoa put out.
Okay, let's get Steve's remarks on that, because certainly a large part...
I'd like to quote my poem.
Well, okay, go ahead, give us your poem.
Okay, I exist, said man to the universe. Even so, replied the universe, I feel no sense of obligation.
Okay, fine. Thanks very much. And certainly, Steve, what do you think about the influence of Sydney volcanic eruptions? Don't they play a large part in Sydney and Sydney, the greenhouse gas effect?
They do. A good comment, Joe. Volcanoes do play a big role. And we've had situations in the past with eruptions. There was in the middle of the Little Ice Age when it was a little bit cold. There was an eruption, and the following year there was so much debris in the atmosphere that was the only recorded year when we didn't have tree ring growth in a number of trees in Europe because the summer was so cold. One thing that many people don't know is that we have volcanic activity going on under the oceans all the time, and there are many vents. Dr. Ian Plimer, a geologist from Australia, talks about that. He says there are 3 million volcanic vents under the sea that are always putting out water vapor and carbon dioxide into the oceans, as well as heat, and really none of that is measured by the IPCC. There's no way that we have of measuring that, and it does affect the climate. So the idea that it's all man-made is really really an overstatement and poor assumption.
Well, I'm sure I am, and because there are so many things. They're talking about, how we're going to take the CO2 and pump it back into the ground, how we're going to capture the CO2, and all they're going to do is just run up the cost of the production of electricity. They're concerned about the methane expressed by cows, and all of this, I think, is simply much to do about nothing. But when we get back here, we'll ask Steve about how the cows and the sheep are endangering the world. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly, you know, we hear all this talk. Oh, my goodness, one of the greatest causes of global warming is the methane expressed by cattle. How would you respond to that?
One of the things about climatism is because human activity and our agriculture and our animals and everything we do from cars to heating our homes to using refrigerators to the food we grow and eat, all of these things put out carbon dioxide. Many of them put out methane. So the solutions of climatism are legion. There are hundreds of solutions, everything from having less children in your family to becoming a vegetarian. There are people that have founded businesses on a green way of cremating bodies so that we don't put so much carbon in the atmosphere. You can go to the airports now and buy carbon offsets for your flight. And then they go to some company that may or may not do anything in the world. But there are just hundreds of solutions, and this one about we do have farmers in New Zealand that are trying to feed mixtures of things to their cattle to reduce methane emissions, but really a lot of nonsense, because none of this is going to affect the natural cycles of the Earth that warm the planet.
I think that's really the problem. What they're doing is get everybody upset, you know, and my goodness, we've got to get people out of their cars, and we've got to stop using electricity, and we're going to have to do something to stop people from flying in airplanes. We're going to have to raise the cost of air travel and put all sorts of taxes onto gasoline, and